Hello.
Are we on air?
Welcome to Rational Radio here at WHIP.
I'm Sam Hughes. Oh, I said Rational Radio.
It's fine. It's a Monday.
I used to be on Rational all last year. This is the district.
It is the district.
On WHIP Radio, I'm Sam Hughes. I'm here with my good friend Haley. How are you, Haley?
I'm good. How are you, Sam?
Oh, I am lovely now that I know how to work the board.
It's always an adventure.
I feel like I'm just stumbling my way through this.
Me
but
too, it's okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine. We'll have a good time. All right. So here on this lovely Monday morning, as Julius Toff would say, we're all news all the time at WHIP. So let's jump into our first story.
Great. Okay. So this one is coming to us from the Temple News. And it's going to talk about how faculty are receiving a smaller slice of revenue at Temple. So according to a report from the Chronicle of Higher Education, Temple spends less on faculty compared to their tuition intake than most universities in like the entire United States. So there's actually a difference of $307 million between the amount of we receive in tuition and fees relative to the amount that we actually spend on like faculty salaries.
Crazy.
Yeah, for the school year of 2016 to 2017.
Wow.
Yeah, so that makes us number 6 out of all universities in the U.S. for the highest discrepancy between those two numbers, with only Penn State being one notch above us at number 5.
Of course.
Yeah, so we're not doing too well.
No.
Now, another study that they talked about in this article was conducted by a think tank. It was a very liberal-leaning think tank called Century Foundation. And they found that for every dollar Temple receives in tuition, only 61 cents of that is actually spent on instructors. Whereas the norm for public universities is about $1.42 spent on instructors.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, that surprised me like quite a little bit because it also mentioned that Temple is not a public university.
Yeah.
And because of that, we receive less state funding. So some of our director of graduate studies in econ, Douglas Weber, made some quotes about it. He said that the argument was that this was pretty normal because Temple's tuition money also goes to maintaining buildings and other maintenance around campus, not just funding research, not just funding faculty members. Whereas full state-funded schools wouldn't have to allocate that money in tuition to keep upkeep on actual campus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, state funding for colleges in general in Pennsylvania has been going down since 1987. So Temple's use of funding from other sources, they get them from endowments a lot, from investments,
mm-hmm.
And then they supplement that money to the money they get from tuition and from the state. But even then, Temple has the second lowest endowment of PA state-related universities, so we're still very, very underfunded.
Yikes.
Now, as for what the professors think about it, there a lot of them who are part of Temple's Association of Union Professionals have spoken out against the lack of faculty funding.
Mm-hmm.
They said that Temple should be spending more money to properly value the people who teach students and to perform other core academic tasks. And the chair of the organization, whose name is Marsha Weinraub, stated that investing more money into faculty would allow for to hire more full-time professors and give adjuncts more contract stability. So that would make it easier for them to hire tenured track professors instead mm-hmm. of keeping all of our professors sort of just as untenured and not doing research for the
yeah.
university. Students are paying a lot in tuition, and sort of the idea is that we should really be getting our money's worth in the form of quality education, and it can be kind of hard to get that if your professor isn't properly compensated for the work that they're doing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Yeah. I mean, I personally know that I would like to be aware of where my money is going to directly impact my education I'm receiving, and I'd rather it not go to the construction of new buildings that I
yeah.
didn't want. and that don't really affect me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember reading Engler's statements at the speech he made at Charles earlier last week, that it would make Temple an even more outstanding university in Pennsylvania having this state-of-the-art library, but I'd really rather see that
Oof.
Funding go to my staff members who are teaching me.
Yeah, I was going to say, last time I was on the show, we talked a lot about
yeah,
the construction,
mm-hmm.
And it's interesting.
Yeah, it
hearing
just keeps coming back up.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing it come full circle and mm-hmm. realizing that like our tuition money
yeah.
isn't going to our professors.
Yeah, and we really don't hear about what happens to it. So, yeah, I found that really interesting while I was reading it, that, in fact, we're not paying our professors.
Yeah.
We're just building new buildings.
I that's so strange to me. I think it always plays into the debate about, like, what the debate. There shouldn't be a debate, about whether or not teachers should be paid. Mm-hmm. But professors are still teachers at the end of the day. They impact America's future and directly impact how I'm doing.
I know. So. And especially if you're not going to give a lot of them tenure. I think it's like 2 years ago when we were hiring professors, it's like 200 something were non-tenure and only 13 were tenured.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not going to give them tenure, at least properly compensate them if they're not going to have that job security.
Yeah.
Because if you're not getting paid well and you have absolutely no way of knowing whether or not you're going to get hired again next year, I would think that that's less incentive for you to actually give quality lessons and quality courses.
No, I agree. I especially think adjuncts, because I've had so many adjunct professors
within
the last couple of semesters, looking at how they get compensated and their job, just like the basis of their job. Some of my professors have like three classes with like 40 kids in each class. They have to grade so many papers at once.
Exactly.
And how do you have the time
to do
not
that.
Even just the time, but like how can you afford to live on a salary that won't truly compensate you and take the time out of your day to not only make lesson plans, but also then grade
all of that work. I had a professor the first semester of my freshman year who was teaching four classes, and she lived in New York, so she commuted here from New York, taught four classes, and then also it was a pretty history heavy class. We did a lot of writing, so I was like, you have to grade so many things.
Oh no, that poor woman.
I know, and I'm like, you're not getting paid enough to do this, and also it isn't at all certain whether or not this is going to be a secure job for you like a couple years down the line. So it makes sense that you wouldn't want to put in that amount of work, especially if you're not getting fairly paid for what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember the other argument for not hiring tenure track professors was that they're going to be busy doing research all the time, and so they're not going to have time for classes. But I was like, if you're teaching four classes, you're not going to have time for all your classes. It's not a viable way to do anything.
No, I definitely don't think that. Also, like at least when I was touring 3 years ago now, which is crazy, they really harped on the fact that Temple is a very research-based college.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're not going to allow your professors to do
research
is a little strange. I think the way that Temple presents itself opposed to like the inner workings of the institution can definitely be a little skewed. I don't want to criticize my main man Temple too much,
but I mean, to me, when I was first like looking into Temple, it wasn't really clear that Temple isn't just like a pure state school. It's not really until you get here and sort of hear the way that they talk about things that you're like, this doesn't seem right. And since it isn't, and a lot of our tuition money is being spent on other things, I feel like we deserve like a bigger say in like what actually gets done, especially since most of it is being done with our money.
Yeah,
like way different from state schools where your tuition money is mainly being used to fund research and faculty, and the rest of it is just grants that they get from the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, so since it's directly the money that I'm paying in tuition, which goes up pretty much every year, I would rather know what they're going to do instead of like hearing about it after they've decided to like start a new construction project.
I feel like we should definitely have more town halls as a community. I think a lot of the things that Temple's been doing is like, well, this looks good on the outside, and not considering this one student's input, two local input, and three like the ethics of what they're creating. But I don't know, that's so weird.
I know. Yeah, I mean, one of my questions was like, would that have affected your decision to attend here when you were a freshman if you'd known that was going to be a problem down
where
the line?
Where our money is going.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, I'm very cynical when I look at universities.
Yeah.
And especially as an out-of-state person who goes here, I forgot the word for resident at the moment, especially as someone who's from out-of-state, it didn't really... I just wasn't looking at state schools in general, so I knew no matter where I was going, my money wasn't going to probably be spent in the ways I necessarily wanted it to. So I don't know if it would have deterred me. I also think we have to look at universities not as a base, as it should be, like not as a basis for higher education, not as a basis of ethics, but as the businesses that they are now. Like they... Of course, like they take the money from their students and they're going to do with it what they want. So instead of investing in their faculty and maybe their like educational system, yeah. what draws students in or like potential students in, mm-hmm. and what makes a school look good on the outside is our new Charles Library.
Our new Klein building.
Yeah, exactly.
The new bridge.
Oh, God, but so I think like, and especially when you're 18, 17, 18, yeah, you don't looking really, at schools, mm-hmm. you don't understand the value no. of what your professors are going to impart on
yeah.
you.
And it's like in a school that's so big that has so many professors, it's very hit or miss, like yeah. whether or not you're going to get a good especially. Teacher, you're going to get a bad one.
Yeah. It's crazy. I'm also an English major. Mm-hmm. So a lot of English professors, or at least when I was applying, if you go on Temple's website, yeah. it seems like they have a lot of English courses mm-hmm. available. Very cool, interesting yeah. English courses. And when you actually go mm-hmm. to register for
they're
them,
gone. Yeah.
they're not there. Mm-hmm. And they only offer some of them in the spring or the yeah. fall. And it's because their lack of faculty mm-hmm. and their lack of like...
Yeah, it's the same way for political science. My professors talk about it all the time. Like we have like 20 sections yeah. of the same gen ed. Yeah. And then like two sections of like a major course you need to take to graduate. Yeah. And there's only 20 seats in each. So they just fill up because everybody needs them. But like people sign up for the gen ed. So they just keep making more sections of gen eds. And I'm
exactly.
like, I don't need these though. Yeah. I need like to take the classes that I need to take to graduate.
Exactly. Which is what you should be providing yeah. for me. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to give me an outline of a course
yeah.
that I have to complete in order to get the degree that I am paying you for.
Exactly. Like it should be way easier to take that class.
Yeah. And they should also be investing in the people who's helping us do that. Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah, I mean, the stuff that professors have to put up with to keep their jobs, especially since like living in Philadelphia isn't cheap.
No.
So you're probably going to have to look at like transportation costs to get here. Yeah. To the time out of your day, like sometimes it's like 1 to 2 hour commute just yeah. to get here to teach. So like that's insane that you wouldn't try to compensate them more fairly for
no, definitely.
The amount of work that they put in just to get here to teach us.
I truly don't understand the, like it plays into the larger role mm-hmm. of just like paying or not paying teachers.
Yeah.
I don't understand the mindset that teaching is easy.
Exactly, because it really isn't.
It is not. And like teachers in and of themselves of all ages have to mm-hmm. have so much patience to yeah. do what they do. And also they're the people who are fundamentally shaping the future. Mm-hmm. Like the way they teach and the education they impart upon us is what makes us good civil citizens.
Exactly. I mean, there's a reason that they call teachers public servants.
Yeah.
Like yeah. they're serving the public and you should compensate them for that.
Exactly. Teachers should be able to live without yeah. having like 3 jobs mm-hmm. on top of their already extremely rigorous.
Yeah. I mean, you to be a teacher, you have to have some like pretty hefty educational qualifications
yeah.
and it's not cheap to get that and you don't get paid that
no.
much. Like that's why the government has made a couple of like loan forgiveness programs uh-huh. specifically for teachers because you're doing a very important job but you do not make enough money.
Yeah.
So there's no possible way you could pay off all of the loans that you're going to have to take out to afford the education you need to have that
it's
job.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I don't understand how...
Yeah, instead of having a program like that, it would be way more helpful if you just compensated them with a fair salary.
Yeah, compensated them accurately.
Yeah, for the amount of work they do.
Yeah, so they don't have to then go mm-hmm. on strike every
yeah.
couple of months to like just afford
have
to live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it extends not only to college professors, but to just like any teacher.
Any
really.
Teacher.
Every
yeah.
teacher.
Every teacher, truly.
Mm-hmm.
It is such an extremely important job, and especially professors, every
yeah.
teacher I've ever had has directly impacted my life in a very significant way.
Exactly.
And I think they deserve to not only be compensated, but also like recognized.
Yeah, and like know they're appreciated
yeah,
for the work
for all
that they're doing. Yeah.
It's just, it's a tough spot to be in.
It is.
All right, pals. So that's the end of our first talk break. We'll be right back. Next up, we're going to talk about hopefully affordable transit coming to Philly.
That would be lovely.
Hot topics. All right, guys, we'll be right back.
From WHIP News, I'm Amaranth Rook. Today is Monday, September 23rd, and this is your WHIP News update. On Sunday, President Trump admitted to discussing Joe Biden with the president of Ukraine in July. His statement came following reports of a whistleblower complaint from a member of the intelligence agency. The complaint has not been released, but reports suggest that it accused President Trump of encouraging Ukraine to investigate a 2020 presidential candidate. According to CBS, Trump has accused Joe Biden of acting inappropriately in 2016 by pushing Ukraine to fire Viktor Shokin, who was the prosecutor general at the time. The president alleges that Biden did this in order to end an investigation into a Ukrainian oil company, which his son is a board member for. There is no evidence right now to suggest that this was the case. Democrats have called for the release of the complaint and the transcript of the call, threatening impeachment if the president refuses. According to CNN, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi gave a deadline, saying they must be released by Thursday. Authorities are investigating after a building in West Philadelphia partially collapsed this morning. According to CBS, records from the city's licenses and inspections show numerous violations at that address. There are no reports of any injuries, and it is still unclear why the building collapsed. From WHIP News, I'm Amaranth Rook, and this has been your WHIP News Update.
Hello, and welcome back to
WHIP
Radio?
Yes, WHIP Radio. Beaming at you live that, in the tech center.
As if it was a question, even though it is not. All right. So here we are on The District back, and we have joining us Amelia Winger.
Hi, guys. Apparently my brand now is being fashionably late. So we love having a class that ends right at 6 and tends to go over by 5 to 10 minutes.
Aww, she comes in mid-break, and we love and support, and are so glad that you're here.
Oh, I love you
so
guys.
So committed.
Y'all are like my favorite part of the day. Hello.
All right, guys. So as Julius Toff would say, here at WHIP News, we're all news all the time. So let's
We totally
jump.
Didn't steal that from Man. It's fine.
Right back into it. All right. So I'm going to tell you about Kendra Brooks, who wants to put affordable transit in Philly. All right. So Kendra Brooks' campaign for an at-large seat on Philadelphia City Council got a boost earlier this month from 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren. My girl. And now she's getting down to the issues that matter to Philly voters. Affordable transit is one of them. She says, for us to be the poorest big city in America, and a large portion of our citizens are using public transportation as a means to work, as well as engage with their families, we need to find a way to make it more affordable. She is running on the family's party ticket. If I didn't mention that earlier, I think I skipped over that bit. So city council's power over SEPTA is kind of limited, unfortunately, even though she's campaigning for it. But the legislative body holds the purse strings for a sizable portion of the state's chartered agencies at $1.49 billion. So they see this role as an opportunity to elevate the authority's commitment to residents who rely on its services the most. As a council person, we can have deeper conversations about investments that the city make into SEPTA and what that looks like in terms of supporting working class folks, as well as students and children, and providing free to low cost transit fares, she says. She also wants to make changes to help poor and working class residents with housing, education, criminal justice laws, and accessibility issue. That means eliminating fares for children and students and ending transfer fees, they said. SEPTA is currently exploring the elimination of transfer fees themselves, but $12 million in revenue is at stake if they do go through with that. Affordability could help with the city's growing congestion problem by making public transit a more viable option for families with multiple children like her own. So I was coming from this article from two perspectives. One, how it would massively benefit my own life as a student who has to commute to work, and also how it would help the communities that are around Temple and like similar ones throughout the city. So there's already specific university programs such as St. Joe's, where St. Joe's students ride for free for SEPTA, which was a major draw when I was looking at colleges. But also, so I was just wondering, how would this benefit us? How would this benefit Philly as a whole? And do you guys think this is a good thing?
I understand how much revenue that we get from this. I think it would be better to offer free transit for like certain people. Like if you work below the poverty line, you don't make wages above that, or you they set like a certain limit for like what your monthly income is. Like students, obviously they should be able to transfer for free. Children like under a certain age, it always seems crazy to me if you have like an 8-year-old child that they need to pay to take the train, like they're a child.
Yeah.
But if you're just like a regular adult living in Philadelphia, we still have to have a way to get revenue out of the public transit system, and that revenue we get should be put back into it for maintenance on subway systems, for the buses. I know that like trains being late and trains being delayed because their construction issues has been like a huge problem. I myself am like always late for work because the MFL trains are always late, and it's like a big deal for me because I don't have a car here. I don't have another way to get there.
Yeah, I can't drive. So.
Exactly. So like that's my only way of transportation, and if it's late, like I can't do anything about that other than like walk for 45 minutes to get to where I work.
No, I'm definitely in the same boat, especially with trolleys.
Trolleys are very horrific
in this city. They're either broken, and also on all of the apps, like I'll be standing next to someone and my trolley, we're searching for the same trolley on the app, and it'll say mine's 5 minutes out, and it'll say to the person next to me that the same trolley is just broken.
Exactly.
So not only is it a bad system in general that doesn't operate functionally, but it's also like the information surrounding it is very mysterious.
I think that's another thing that they should focus on in order to like boost SEPTA in general, is that they need to improve the infrastructure of the system. Because like I know one, like personally I grew up outside of Philly, and so one thing I was always told growing up was my parents were so afraid to let me ride the train by myself. And even now, like, my mom hates the idea of me taking the train by myself at night because there's this terrible connotation of what those stations are like and the type of people who hang out at those stations.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be this really scary thing. And so I think if we want to drive people to use SEPTA and view it as a more viable option, we also need to focus on improving its image right now. Because, like, you can do whatever you want to price, but if there's no demand to be taking it in the first place, then it's still not like you're still not going to get all of the audience that you could. You're not going to reach the maximum amount of people.
Well, I also think that a way that SEPTA could be massively benefited, and I know Philly is an old city with an old infrastructure, but it's just having more lines in general.
Having more trains. Like, because Philly is so difficult that we have two main lines and it cuts through the middle of the city, because there's no way to get to the outskirts that isn't completely convoluted.
It's
like
horrible.
If I want to go to Fishtown or somewhere like, or Northern Liberties from here, I shouldn't have to take a 45 minute train ride.
That is where I work.
When that is literally just like a straight shot to the right from us.
Like, no,
that's
honestly,
so convoluted.
It takes less time, because I've done this, it takes less time to walk to Northern Liberties.
It does. It's awful.
It does to take SEPTA. And I'm originally from right outside of New York City. So I grew up very privileged in the fact that New York is very easy to get around once you figure out how the subways worked. So transitioning from a New York system to a Philly system was awful for me. I did not understand how the subways couldn't run the entire city in a capable way. And I know it's because Philly is older. It's not set up on the same grid that New York is. But I do think that the population of the city could seriously benefit by having a more easily accessible line.
We should make one under Ridge or something like that, because that's like one of the only diagonal streets the city has to offer in the first place. We might as well maximize that potential.
And
I mean, granted, I don't know the whole like stretch of Ridge, so I don't know how that would affect the actual like intact structure of that street right now. I'm just saying this blindly, but yeah, and I mean, like, maybe it's my fault that I don't know how to ride a bike and I don't know how to drive. Maybe that just, like, completely exposes how incompetent of a person I am.
No, but also that, like, because that would, that then affects people with, like, disabilities or, like, accessibilities, like, or even families,
and not, and
as
like,
we were discussing earlier.
And that not every station is wheelchair accessible. Like, there are certain...
Especially ones that say they are, but aren't.
Yeah, and or that they say they are, and it's really hard to figure out, like, how it works, where to go.
I've tried to find the City Hall accessibility ramp for a while.
Me too.
And I could not find it. I think it's... I think SEPTA is such a weird...
It really is. Like, and even trying to, like, transfer lines, like, just figuring out in City Hall Station, like, how to get to the other side. If you've never been here before and you've never done it, like, it's really confusing. And a lot of the time, there's not, like, any SEPTA employees there for you to ask.
Yeah, you're right.
But, yeah, I definitely think that SEPTA could be improved in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's also...
Even just trying to keep the stations like a little bit cleaner. I feel like that would help with the image that they're dangerous.
Because if they want to try to make this a family type thing or try to encourage students to take it more, then it's like that's the type of audience that you need to appeal for. And it's like, I guess like they just need to like gentrify it as much as that like might hurt to say. And as much as like as horrible and not great as that is, like that's kind of like ultimately what they're getting at here. So they might as well just say it instead of trying to hide it behind other things.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because people are like, when you start implementing policies like this, people are going to notice and get mad no matter what. So if you don't just outright say it, it's not like you're like diffusing the situation. You're just putting off the inevitable, and it's going to make people madder in the long run.
Yeah, I think the difference between this specifically and gentrifying it as a whole, though, is the fact that this would massively help underserved communities or people who are below the poverty line, especially getting to and from work.
And I don't think it's also going to impact the like intact culture in those areas either.
You know what I mean?
Like it's not going to like culturally affect anything. So I think it's just going to like it could influence like what the communities surround, like the direct blocks around subway stations look like in the like coming decades, because if they're more attractive, then more people are going to want to live by them.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, I don't think it's going to like immediately have that large impact.
No.
And even like down the line, if they do start working on this, the amount that it could help bring in more residents to Philly, more taxpayers who can pay in an upper bracket, and that's going to help like us sort of rise out of this like poorest big city in America. Like we have to implement some changes to get out of it. We can't just stay the same or nothing's going to happen. We're not going to get better. So they have to do something. And this is mostly a move in the right direction. Like they've got the spirit. They're on the right track.
I definitely think that this is a more acceptable and viable option than like New York's recent policy, or not policy, but like announcement that said that they would be prosecuting fare jumpers to the furthest extent of the law. It's like, we're gonna get ya. Which I think is crazy, because that just harms and continues to harm people in low-income areas who need to use transport as their
and
only
vehicle.
And
don't have money to do it.
Yeah, and don't have money to pay for it. But the thing is, these people, whether or not they have money, still need to get to work somehow.
Exactly.
They still need to make a living in order to live and eat and things like that. So I definitely think by saying whether or not it's sort of a branch off gentrification by, like, making these stations nicer and hopefully, like, decreasing the value of fares, I do think this is a more viable and ethical option than just being like, we are gonna get you, I promise.
Like, don't do it, you will be prosecuted.
But no, I really liked Kendra Brooks. Hopefully this goes through.
She's having some good ideas here.
All right, guys. Well, within the last 3 minutes, this is a really funny story, so I'm going to tell you about it. So over the weekend, there was a fire that broke out overnight in a West Philly apartment building, which hospitalized 3 people and displaced 10. However, there
this
is
isn't
a
funny yet.
No, I promise. Sorry. There is a really funny shift. But an interview with one of the heroes, Hameek Lal, is going viral because he told reporters he intervened with the rescue when he saw the building on fire at 2 a.m. on Saturday. Law is being called a hero for catching children being thrown to safety from the burning building. So this guy is amazing. So he said, and I quote, this is my favorite part. I ran to the back door to see if it was open, and it was. I ran upstairs and I was greeted with smoke, and I ran back downstairs. By that time, the ladder truck was pulling up, and ironically, me and one of my old coworkers took the ladder off the truck and raised it up and assisted people down. My man just started throwing babies out the window. But it gets better. And then, in honor of the wide receiver Nelson Aguilar's pair of dropped passes and lost fumbles in the Eagles game, in the Eagles' last 2 games, he said, and we were catching them, unlike Aguilar and his mistakes. I would like to put that out there.
Oh my God, you're right. That was worth it.
Right? Isn't it so good?
I was ready to start crying at the beginning. I was like, where is this going?
No, so not only did he help actually literally save babies.
Oh my God, they were just chucking babies out the window, y'all.
He's also shading the Eagles.
I saw this when I was looking up stories today, and I knew I couldn't like have it.
Call out the Eagles,
guys. We're gonna switch to a sports show just so that way we can talk about things like this. This is the news that we care about.
But so, Hameek Lal, I love you. I hope you're doing good. Thank you for saving
those babies. If you're out
there,
then Sam's proposing right now.
Oh, I will literally get down on one knee.
You can throw your own babies together.
I'm not even an Eagles fan. Like, I'm just a fair weather fan, but I
love... That's a dangerous thing to say on this station.
I'm from New Jersey. But, oh, I love them. I thought that was the best story I'd ever heard, and I really... really hope that Hameek Lal
I hope
and
he's having a good day.
Well, saved you guys are all invited to the wedding.
All right, guys. Well, that's our second talk break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk about Temple President Richard Elgert and his delivery
of the university address. So we'll be right back, pals.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Rational Radio here at WHIP Radio, Philly's number one college radio station. I almost said radio in general, which would...
We're your singular radio.
We're the only one you can listen to.
104.5, canceled.
All right, so let's jump right back into it. What are we going to talk about next, Amelia?
Okay, so y'all, this is a bit of a spicy story. So this is coming to you from the Philadelphia Inquirer. And so as farmers flock to hemp, Amish and English in Pennsylvania foresee real profits. So we've got all farmers across the state are starting to actually grow hemp. So Pennsylvania is currently in the midst of its first commercial hemp harvest. They're trying to do it before October because apparently when temperatures drop, that's when the crop gets unprofitable because it all dies off. So the federal farm bill legalized hemp cultivation in December, and hundreds of farmers across the nation are now growing it, with over 300 farmers in Pennsylvania have now hold permits to grow it here. Pennsylvania farmers this year have planted roughly 8,000 acres of hemp across 63 of its 67 counties. Lancaster County, in particular, is the hemp center of the state, with many Amish farmers choosing to grow it for investors. The Amish were, initially reticent about hemp's similarity to marijuana and concerned about marijuana's psychoactive THC. But once they understood that the CBD in hemp was good for you, they decided to start growing it. Also, I kind of just thought this part was interesting. It's about how they harvest it. But they're harvesting it by hand, of course, and they're using saws to cut through the thick and bushy stalks, some of which are up to 4 inches in diameter, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Wow. Apparently, they're also using horses to grow it and everything. I don't know. I just thought this part was interesting because it gave me, like, a total mental image in my head. But, anyway, farmers are drawn to cultivating hemp because of the potential profits that it has. Experts estimated earlier this year that some CBD strains could reach prices of $50,000 per acre. So they estimate that the average price of the average strain is going to be around $10,000 per acre. But the more CBD, like the higher the concentration of CBD is in the strain, that's what's going to bump up prices. Just for a little comparison to kind of put things in perspective for everyone, corn generates around $300 to $400 per acre, and tobacco generates around a few thousand per acre. This is why the Amish have tended to grow tobacco in the past, because it's one of the more profitable crops, and that's why they're now starting to gravitate towards hemp instead. However, some agronomists fear that this massive interest in cultivation will lead to an extreme overabundance of hemp, despite the fact that demand for CBD products is skyrocketing right now. This is mainly because this is a totally new industry and there aren't any reliable economic precedents to analyze market patterns on. In order to try to address these concerns, Pennsylvania will be hosting the first ever PA Hemp Summit from October 7th to 8th in Lancaster County, which is fitting because it's the capital of hemp in PA, apparently, to help answer those questions and concerns. So I just wanted to know, like, what are your guys' first thoughts on this? Because this is, like, a lot.
I mean, living near Lancaster most of my life makes a lot of sense. they tend to, like, jump on whatever crop makes money. So I'm not at all surprised. And I'm sure soil in Lancaster is great for growing hemp. you got to just capitalize on whatever you've got. And if it's good for hemp, I guess they're going to make a lot of money off of it. I would be interested to see how the FDA begins to react to this, like, rise in CBD oil. As I'm fairly sure I read something about them reviewing whether or not that
they
was,
are,
like...
Yeah. Because I saw that they just increased restrictions on CBD in, like, food additives. Mm-hmm. So that you can't... Like, I know that it was, like, Food Network just posted a thing on their Snapchat Discover story today about, like, they're banning, like, CBD lattes and, like, things like that. Sorry. I'm really into cooking. So I was talking about this morning.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to see how that starts to affect this, like, new great crop, like hemp, that's going to bring in a bunch of money to these counties in PA.
Also, like, how do you think this is going to affect agriculture in PA? Because I know the Amish were already, like, choosing to grow a lot of tobacco for the profits. Mm-hmm. So if, like, if hemp is going to be the next thing that we break into, like, do you think that that's going to be the shift that we see now that, like, PA is primarily going to start growing drugs?
I mean, it's pretty on brand. but I think you'd probably see a bigger effect in, like, city areas, because it tends to be, like, big farm corporations will export their produce out to cities that don't have that. Because I know where I live, like, in the middle of nowhere, most of the produce we get is, like, local farms. Mm-hmm. Like, your neighbor will give you something, or, like, everyone for the most part grows their own stuff. So I don't think it will affect them very much. But yeah, if people are moving a lot away from normal crops that they would grow, the people, like, typically consume, you're going to have to get that from farther away, like out in the Midwest, out towards the West Coast as well. And if you have to bring it longer or travel for longer, it's going to be more and more expensive. And I know produce in Philadelphia in general is already pretty expensive.
Yes.
So I can't imagine that's going to get better if larger farms start moving to growing more profitable crops like hemp that aren't going to be something you'd normally find in someone's diet.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really great point too, because, like, food scarcity is a problem in cities like Philadelphia. So if we're going to actively choose to start replacing some of our food crop production in already, so then, like, how is that going to actually affect that? Mm-hmm. Because we need to fix problems right now. Like, should we be allowed to granted, it's not like this is becoming our leading crop right now by any means. Yeah. This is just the first time that it's happening. But if it does well right now, mm-hmm. then it definitely, I think, has the potential to do that.
Yeah.
And it has the potential to restructure, like, our growing hierarchy. Uh-huh. So, like, should they be allowed to do that? Should there be limits on how much we, like, should there be a roof on that, mm-hmm. on how much we can grow?
I'd also be concerned about the repercussions for the farms who are growing this when the FDA does come out. If they ban CBD, like, that's the driving factor of wanting to produce this specific crop. So if that gets cut and mm-hmm. you're in the middle of a harvest season, now you have all of this worthless product.
Yeah, that's true.
And there is no way to change that. So you can't go back an entire year and decide to not grow, to grow something else. So that's going to really, especially if you're a smaller farm, like, one bad season can, like, kill your business entirely.
That's true.
Also, another interesting point that mm-hmm. I was just thinking of is to go back to, like, if they're going to export their crops into near cities. I think it's really interesting the demographics that decide mm-hmm. to grow hemp mm-hmm. opposed to the people who are typically punished for it.
Yeah.
So it's like the Amish, who are very white, growing hemp when, like, people of color have been systematically punished for using
and
the product.
There is a difference between hemp and marijuana.
That is true. That
and I think
true.
That's an important distinction to make. Mm-hmm. But that's also very true. Should there be limits, like, if something goes wrong with hemp production and something, people end up getting hurt, should the growers have to be held accountable for mm-hmm. that?
Yeah,
especially since they're being allowed to do this despite the fact that there's very little information about the health effects.
Yes, extremely unregulated things you can also put into it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be, like, the main concern is the additives you're putting into.
Because I know that one of the farmers that they interviewed for this story were talking about how they had to take all these extra measures to make sure that the hemp that they were growing was organic.
Yeah.
And they made it sound like a very, like, extra thing that they had to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, like, what, like, obviously not everyone's going to take that step. So what does not organic look like with that?
Yeah. And I mean, even when you say, there's a reason that when you buy stuff from the grocery store, you're supposed to wash it. Like, even if it's organic, there's very little regulation about what you actually have to put on there to slap the word organic on top of it.
Yeah.
So I would think that, like, any, since this, the type of things that this product is being used for, you have to be very careful about any pesticides you use, any other sort of chemicals, because I'm certain it would be way easier to contaminate.
And the runoff from that pesticide, how is that going to affect the ecosystem if, like, any of, like, the strain of the drug gets in there?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a farming expert, so I don't know if that's even possible or if that was just,
Introducing a plant like this into just, like, the ecosystem, how other animals that might consume this plant, or how, like, that might be detrimental to, like, even farm animals as well. Because it's really hard to keep what you grow separate from what the animals on your farm eat. And a lot of like beef, a lot of pork, like chicken and poultry come from Amish farms as well. Especially if you're looking for, like, locally sourced or very organic or free range type poultry or meats, a lot of that does come as well from Lancaster area. So if that's being brought up in close proximity to cultivation of hemp crops, I would be concerned about what the repercussions of that might be.
Right. And just in general, like, hemp products are unregulated at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's like, even when distilling it, it's kind of like a...
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be careful with dairy farming as well. Yeah. If a lot of chemicals can end up in cow's milk if the cow ingests any of them. So if there was ever cross-contamination with hemp products into the feed that goes to cows, like, that could cause a really big problem as well. And since it is so unregulated, people really aren't going to be looking for that.
Yeah. I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, we'll keep you guys updated. Especially after this summit, I feel like that would be a fun time to, like, check back in on this story. But anyway, we're going to shift gears and we're going to go back to talking about Temple. I know that we had talked, like, we had mentioned this right before the talk break, so we're going to end back at home. So last Thursday, President Englert gave his annual State of the University address and predominantly focused on the university's construction progress as it approaches the halfway point in its 10-year master plan, as well as discussing upcoming expansion projects. I know you guys must be so tired of hearing us talk about Temple construction, because I feel like we could talk about it forever
because it
personally affects us. But I'm going to try to give the rundown of the construction part of the State of the University address as quickly as I can. So he focused first on highlighting everything great about the new Charles Library, saying that we dare to dream bigger than most dare to dream, and things of that sort of nature. And I thought that was very funny because it sounds like it should be on a poster in the library. He also discussed the future of the collaboration between Temple's University Health System and Jefferson University. Temple announced back in July that it sold the Fox Chase Cancer Center and its stake in Health Partners Plan, a local nonprofit health insurance organization, to Jefferson University. So that's kind of where that comes from. And he also announced plans to build the Alpha Center, which is an early childhood education, dental, and behavioral health center that had been stalled in approval by City Council last year due to criticism from the surrounding community. So in addition to construction, he actually talked about other things, because apparently other things to talk about with Temple. He highlighted the campus's climate action plan, which aims to reduce carbon emissions at the university by 80% by 2050, and also the university's new smoke-free policy, which is a ban on all tobacco and vape product use on main campus that we began to enforce this semester. If you guys are, like, diehard district fans, then you'll probably remember us talking about this, like, last semester and, like, really having some hot takes on that. So if you're ever feel like taking a deep dive because the whole podcast. Temple also things he also highlighted with the environmental and enrollment progress included Temple receiving a Carnegie RI research status designation, and also our enrollment increasing to 39,000 students, which is up 2,000 students from last year. Englert also praised Temple's efforts to outreach to the community, including the university's formation of a special services district last spring, its hosting of Philadelphia Free Streets, an outdoor activities fair for two consecutive years, and Temple's 13th annual job fair, which attracted more than 140 employers and 1,000 job seekers. Which I find that to be kind of ironic, though, because wasn't the community, like, weren't we just talking about with the Alpha Center, with how it was literally stalled because of community backlash?
And we're like, no, let's do it.
That seems very biased, and I'd like to dig into that eventually.
I would too. Yeah, with our propensity for not having great relations to the neighboring community, I would be interested in some details about why the surrounding neighborhood was not happy about that.
Yeah, and the fact that he's making it come off as something that we're doing for you.
Yeah, like city council wouldn't let you do this, so we're going to do it.
And also, why does he get to selectively bias what's included in the state of the university? And if that is incredibly biased and we can see that right away, what else is he trying to shape and twist for us?
I mean, I talked about this earlier, but I definitely think we have to take into consideration the fact that Temple is not the moral and ethical judgment that we think it is.
Yes.
And that at the end of the day, most universities and almost all colleges are an organization and a business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he is basically the CEO of this business.
Mm-hmm. That is his functional job more than anything else.
Well, I think that that's more so the board of trustees.
Oh,
probably.
But of course. He is just a figurehead.
He's the figurehead of it.
Yeah.
So of course he's going to have you're going to have to spin this.
And it's important to remember that Temple is not a public university.
Yeah. Yes.
We spoke a little bit about that earlier, that a lot of our funding is not coming from the state. So most of our tuition money is being used to directly fund these things. So
anyway.
Yeah. All right, fellows. Well, thank you for listening to us here on The District at WHIP's Philly's number one college radio station. If you want to hear even more local news, you can check us out on The District on Spotify. Or if you want a more global look at what's going on right now, why don't you give our sister show, Rational Radio, a check? They're also on Spotify. We're going to make it easy for you. You can share your thoughts on our social at WHIP Radio while you're at it. Also, don't forget to check out our Crackdowns, which will be airing
Monday and Friday.
Friday. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.